Good afternoon and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. My guest this week, speaking by phone from his office, is Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon to you. Thanks for being with us.
Stan, great to be with you today.
If you've got a question for Mayor McBarnes during our show today, there are a number of ways that you can get to us. You can call us at 496-1999. You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org. You can also tweet your question to @WBAAnews on Twitter, and all of those will work as ways to get your question in on today's program. Mr. Mayor, your city recently established what you're calling a hearing authority, which is looking to crack down on owners of dilapidated buildings and try to make sure that those buildings are better taken care of. Can you explain briefly what that body has the authority to do?
Absolutely, Stan. So under the McBarnes administration and what we're trying to do in Frankfort, we're focusing on four key cornerstones: economic development, communications, citizen voice, and neighborhood revitalization. Much like the rest of the Bible Belt of America and rural communities, we are facing a dilapidation of housing. In order to get our community to grow in the future, and we've had a stagnant population growth over the past 50 years, we believe it's very important at this time to get serious about our neighborhoods and serious about our housing. A main reason for establishing the hearing authority is to provide a process that's accountable and transparent to gain compliance with those property owners who have been unresponsive or uncooperative in the past. What will happen is based on Indiana's unsafe building law, which is where this hearing authority is created out of, that umbrella, our building inspector, Sam Payne, will send a notice to these property owners stating per X, Y, and Z within that unsafe building law of why their property is not compliant. He is more than willing to work with those individuals. We want to work with those individuals to fix those problems within the property. If we do not get a response, he will then issue a notice to that property owner that they come before the hearing authority board. That meeting is a completely open and transparent meeting. It gives that property owner the opportunity to state why their property is in that state. And at that time, the hearing authority, compiled to the Board of Works, and two appointments by the Board of Works, will make a decision on whether a fine will be levied, whether we will continue to work with that property owner for mitigation of those issues, or if the issue is bad enough, we can also issue a demolition process for that particular property.
I'm assuming for the city to create such an entity, there's got to be widespread agreement that there are a significant number of buildings that are in bad shape, right?
Absolutely, Stan. I sit and am a part of many boards made up of the patriarchs and matriarchs of this community. And unfortunately, we all agree that housing is one area that we're sliding backwards, and we have to do something to stop that. And this process, what I love about it is it's transparent. It holds individuals accountable, and we're simply asking them to make their property safe, to not only provide a better atmosphere for those that live inside it, most importantly, but also for the neighborhood as well.
How many people are we talking about who might get those letters in the next few weeks?
It's hard to say, Stan. We have roughly 16 to 20 properties that our building inspector has deemed to be on the list that need attention immediately. So I'm going to say roughly 16 to 20 letters will be sent to those individuals. Now, how many hearing authority meetings we have, that's hard to say. Again, our building inspector wants to work with these individuals. We want to work with them in a peaceful manner to mitigate these issues. But unfortunately, if that does not happen, we will hold hearing authority meetings.
What do you mean when you say work with them? What is your plan for the back and forth between the city and the average homeowner who might get one of these letters?
Sure. Basically, Stan, the city just wants to know that they recognize there is a problem, that they understand that per the unsafe building statute in the state of Indiana, that they're providing an unsafe atmosphere for the individuals that live in that home and the neighborhood in general. And we just want them to know and us to know that they're working towards mitigation efforts to solve that problem. As long as we understand that plan and we know that's going on and we know that there's going to be accountability there, we're fine with that. But unfortunately, we're not seeing that widespread. So that's where the hearing authority comes into place.
So what do they have to tell you when they come to the meeting? And perhaps more to the point, what sort of follow-up is there going to be? If they come to you and say, yeah, I'll fix my house, and they go away, it would seem like the city has to then go and make sure that that's happening, right?
Absolutely, and that's where our building inspector's department comes into play. Obviously, they will be documenting this entire process through pictures and written statements and accounts of their own. We'll look at that at the beginning, and then as we work with them to correct these issues and oversee that process, More documentation will take place, and all that information, again, will be presented to the hearing authority board, so we know there's progress there, we know there's accountability there, we have transparency, and we can keep the process moving along in a responsible manner.
I was thinking about it earlier this morning, and it occurred to me you could easily have a homeowner who is cited for having an unsafe structure who comes before you and says, well, of course it's unsafe. I make the median city income of 30 grand a year. I can't possibly afford the major renovations to my home that you're asking for. What happens in that case?
Sure. We understand that there's economic hardship. I completely understand that. But at the same time, we owe it to individuals in this city, much of the time tenants within a landlord situation, we owe them a safe atmosphere in our community. So we just want to make sure there's accountability by that landlord, that they recognize that there is an issue and that they are working towards mitigating that issue. Now, if there's a true justified reason why there's a hole in that roof or why the foundation is crumbling and why they can't fix it, of course, we're going to take that into account and we're going to work with them over an extended period of time to fix that problem. We're going to show mercy on that. But at the same time, if that's not the issue, we owe it to that tenant to expect a certain standard of safety for them as they strive to thrive here in the city.
Are you primarily talking about sending these letters out to landlords of single or multi-dwelling units? Is it primarily a landlord problem and not a single-unit home problem?
Across the board, Stan, I believe that we'll find, just from my opinion, that much of this is rental situations in accordance with an unsafe dictation of that property. But at the same time, this isn't limited to rental properties. This will also face owner-occupied properties as well. So although we will see owner-occupied issues, I believe the majority of the problem will be with rental properties.
So how do you make people comply with whatever you suggest that they need to do?
Sure. Well, if our building inspector, if he is not able to work with that individual within the 10 days from originally receiving that letter and they can't come up with a responsible game plan to fix that issue, those individuals will be called before the hearing authority. If a plan is still not put in place, that's where the fine structure will come in. Our hearing authority can issue a fine up to $5,000 and, again, order a process for demolition if the situation is bad enough. So, unfortunately, at times in the civil process, fines have to be given in order to gain compliance. We do not want that, but again, we're serious about the safety of the people that live in this city and the state of our neighborhoods.
From a legal point of view, can the city compel anyone to go before the hearing board?
Yes, they are compelled to come before the hearing board. If that does not happen and we see the property continue to degrade to the point that we believe it's endangering those that live in the property and the neighborhood, that's where the demolition process comes into play. And I'm guessing that financial institutions that may be overseeing that property will take note of that, and I'm hoping will then work with us. I had the pleasure of meeting with Mayor Tony Rozworski on this matter. Lafayette carries out a similar process in terms of the hearing authority, and they've seen much greater compliance through this process, people really staying accountable for their properties and staying on top of it, because they know if they don't, that there will be accountability and consequences there. So we're hoping to follow suit in terms of our neighborhoods here in Frankfort.
I understand the need to have a fining process so that there seems to be some sort of necessity to comply. But let's take our hypothetical person I mentioned a few minutes ago who makes the median income. If that person's assessed a fine, isn't it possible that it's just putting them further financially from being able to repair their building, because now they have to give money to the city in addition to Lowe's or to the contractor who would build whatever it is they need redone on their home? I mean, isn't it possible you're just pushing them further away from actually having the cash that they would need to make the changes you want them to make?
Hypothetically, absolutely, you are correct. But in the same sense, if you're going to run a business in our community and you're going to have rental properties and you're going to put people in situations that could be unsafe for them, could be unsafe for their children, for their loved ones, I believe we as a city at least have to strive to hold them accountable. And if there truly isn't funds there to upkeep that business in a way that provides safety for those that you're caring for, then that's not a good situation. And then we talk about moving further down the process in terms of demolition.
What would cause the city to decide to have something demolished?
If something is to the point that the foundation is crumbling, that the structural integrity of the home just can't withstand the damage that the elements create, that we can't provide a process with that owner of that property that will fix that property, and we know that situation will be the same for those tenants and future tenants, then we have to take into consideration their safety and choose to move forward with the demolition process.
Let's talk about the finances behind that for a second, because it sounds good on its face to demolish buildings that aren't safe. But I wonder, though, if it's going to pose a financial problem for the city and maybe even for the county, because I assume at least some, if not all, of these structures are on tax rolls somewhere. So the county is getting property tax money for them, which if you knock them down, they'd get less money for. And I also would imagine the city would have to pay someone, even if it's your own employees, to go out of their way or to pay an independent contractor to demolish those buildings, which would be another cost to the city. So how would you afford that?
Sure. Well, we're one step ahead of the game in terms of demolition costs. 2 years ago, when we came into office looking at the neighborhood revitalization cornerstone, we found that our unsafe building fund in the city that was used to demolish properties that were completely abandoned and vacant was close to zero. So I worked with the city council, and we actually work within a fund called the Economic Development Income Tax Line Item, to build in close to $75,000 a year for the demolition of unsafe properties. So we're going to continue to fund that on a yearly basis because we believe that's very important. In terms of taxes, I really look to our county officials to give me information on that. You know, on a lot of these homes that are dilapidated, I have to believe that the assessed valuation on those homes aren't very great. And at times, those properties are even tax delinquent to a certain aspect. So we'll work closely with county officials to make sure that we balance things to not provide any unintended consequences that could be there.
Are you taking into account tax delinquency and things like that before you take a wrecking ball to something?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and that's where, in talking about housing in general, our redevelopment commission that was recently formed in the city of Frankfort is going to look at those homes that are tax delinquent. If the city can scoop some of those homes up through the redevelopment commission, and either if we decide those properties need to be demolished or those homes can perhaps be rehabbed by a redevelopment commission and resold to a new family that would come to Frankfort, that's all the better. But I guess getting to the point of demolition, Stan, we don't want to demolish every home that's uncompliant in the city. We truly want to work with that property owner to remedy the situation. We just want to make sure that they're fully holding themselves accountable for the lives that are in that home and their safety. That's what this process is about. It's a completely transparent process and an accountable process, something that we want the public to be a part of.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're chatting with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. If you've got a question for him, call us at 496-1999 or send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your question to @WBAAnews on Twitter. I wonder, especially since we're talking about a lot of rental properties and potentially even multi-unit properties here, if you knock those homes down, you've got people living in them, of course. How would the city then deal with any resulting issues of relocating the people who were in those homes or, God forbid, the resulting homelessness issues that would come with those people no longer having a roof over their head? I mean, it would seem like at least another cost to the city, if not a need for looking at how that affects your social service structure, right?
Sure. Well, from a social service structure, from a high-level standpoint of homelessness, of course, we as a government would look at that. But really, this would be a private relationship between the landlord and that specific renter. We would not be involved with relocating somebody. I look at this as people have businesses in our community, and if those businesses are in a fashionable state of safety, we're going to go in and intervene. So if we do have to demolish a home that has renters within it, or that property owner can't fix that property up to the standards that we believe is acceptable under the umbrella of the unsafe building law, that will be up to those private individuals to work with the landlord or theirself individually to find another place to live. But knowing that they were in an unsafe structure to begin with and their lives were being put at risk because the foundation of the home or the roof of the home was in such a bad state, I don't believe we as a government and a building inspector's department are truly doing our job.
Well, but you have to acknowledge that those people, even if they know that, in some of those cases, it might be that their financial situation is such that this is what they can afford and that they have some sort of ongoing relationship with that landlord. And yes, you're absolutely right. They may be living in an unsafe structure, but that might be the situation that they're in. And, I mean, isn't it possible that the city is going to put people on the street if they do this?
Well, you know, Stan, we have a lot of great landlords in the city of Frankfort that do a great job of upkeeping their properties. We do have an organized landlord association. Of course, that's a private organization. So we'd be happy to connect those individuals with that private landlord situation and find out what other opportunities there would be in the city for that same type of pay structure on a monthly basis, but at the same time providing them a safe atmosphere to live in.
So is there a mechanism for actually doing that in place, especially a mechanism that would talk to those tenants before the building gets knocked down or before anyone gets evicted because the building is deemed unlivable? I mean, do you have a structure in place that sets that relationship up so that people can move from a home to a home and keep a roof over their head in a contiguous fashion?
Sure. I think it's only fair that when we notify the property owner that there is an unacceptable situation at that specific property, that our building inspector's department will also communicate with the tenants of that structure so that they can have a good fluid dialogue with the person that they pay rent to on a monthly basis that will keep them up to date on the situation. And again, these meetings are completely public and open, so we will also encourage those tenants to attend the meetings and give us their thoughts on their living environment and how they think things should move forward as well.
And that could be interesting in terms of the information you get from those people. Although I could see it as a double-edged sword, because let's assume you have someone who's in a low-income scenario where they're paying, you know, $100 a month for rent or something, and those people might not want to come to that meeting if they are just the tenant and they're kind of the third party in all of this, because that could be seen as them not necessarily wanting to talk about a situation they're probably not entirely proud of. At the same time, it gets the city information on what is the plight of some of the lowest income people in the city. So how do you go about making sure that those people have their voices heard and at the same time that the concerns that they are inevitably going to raise are addressed going forward?
Sure. And again, this is not a plight against people that aren't at a higher economic level. This is to make sure that all people in the city of Frankfort are safe and that we have a respect for all people in our neighborhoods that have invested money into their homes, that they want to see their property values retained at a high level and could be affected by a dilapidated property that's right across the street. I understand what you're saying and I empathize with it, and I think that's the process. When our building inspector makes initial contact on that home, certified letters are sent out in order to get with that property in order to remedy the situation that's going on. Maybe a private conversation is held outside of a public hearing with those individual tenants of that property to get their thoughts on the state of that property and how they would like to see things move forward.
I got to looking at the state law this morning, and one of the thoughts that struck me was, I wonder if it has unintended consequences of affecting different economic classes of people differently, because it would seem to me that this law could be applied very differently in a community such as a Carmel or a Fishers, where you might have a generally higher median income, nicer homes, the occasional blighted property, whereas it's very different in Frankfort, where the median income is much, much lower than it is in a Hamilton County. And it could look, don't you think, on its face that you are doing what I know you're not trying to do, which is, you know, go after people who might not have the money to fix things or the money to live in the kind of home that they would ideally like for themselves or their family. I mean, isn't it possible that this law affects people of different economic status differently?
I understand what you're saying, and you know, I'm going to stay. We're working under the umbrella of Indiana Code 36-7-9. So, you know, I think an unsafe building in Carmel is the same as an unsafe building in the city of Frankfort. If the foundation is crumbling, if the structure itself, and this is right out of the IC code, is dangerous to a person or property because of a violation of a statute or ordinance concerning the building condition or maintenance, that's going to be the same no matter what city you're talking about. And again, this isn't to damage people that are at a lower income level. This is to make sure that we uphold business owners in our community to a certain standard in terms of rental properties and owner-occupied properties, and we make sure that they're providing a safe living environment for the people that are living there. At the core of this is what this is about, and at the same time, improving the neighborhoods in the city of Frankfort so that we can sustain neighborhood growth and economic growth for our community in the years to come.
Well, right, but you have to admit that this affects someone in Frankfort who, on average, would not have nearly as much disposable income as the average person who might be forgetting about their house in Carmel, right? I mean, those two sets of people will react to being called before the hearing authority and saying, we need you to pay X amount of dollars to fix the foundation on your house very differently.
I understand what you're saying, and I'm thinking about the constituents that I serve, the individuals that have to live within those homes, and if we can raise our standards, if we can force people to be accountable when it comes to housing, just simply to provide a safe environment for those that live there, 10 years from now, those individuals that are coming here to live, to raise a family, are going to have a safer and better situation for that in the years to come.
We have just a few minutes left with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes on today's edition of Ask the Mayor here on WBAA. Please give us a call at 496-1999 if you have a question for the mayor. Send an email to ask@WBAA.org or tweet your questions to @WBAAnews on Twitter. So this move to rehab blighted property is, of course, part of that 200-day plan that you just updated. And the biggest section of that, it was interesting to me, is neighborhood revitalization. That's got 18 different priorities in it. That's more than the rest of the list combined. The rest of the list is just 11 different things. So almost two-thirds of your list is neighborhood revitalization, which leads me to this broader question. Tell me how you view your city. Are you trying to stop it, like some of these buildings, from crumbling?
Absolutely, and keep in mind, Stan, you know, one cornerstone of our plan, and has been since 2012, is citizen voice. So these plans are accrued and they're made after hearing that citizen voice. And when it comes to neighborhood revitalization and housing, I appreciate the fact you've talked to me about this so much this morning, because it's on our citizens' minds. They're calling out for it. They want change. In terms of economic development, I believe we've revolutionized the city. ConAgra Foods is building a 1.6 million square foot facility here, bringing close to 200 jobs. Indiana Packers has announced in the last 3 months they're bringing an additional 105 jobs approximately to our community. So we're growing when it comes to economic development. We put a brand new Ivy Tech campus, a $4.1 million campus, $2.3 million of which was paid from our private sector through donations in our downtown. So we're seeing our community grow, and one of the last hurdles we need to overcome is housing, is our neighborhoods, and that's why you see so much of an emphasis in that plan. And one other thing I'll note is, in terms of neighborhood revitalization, we're going to use a great pin mapping system through our police department that will also take into account property maintenance complaints and code violations within those different sectors of the city. So we'll be able to benchmark. We'll be able to look at our neighborhoods. We'll be able to look at the crime that's happening there, the property maintenance code violations that are happening there, and then we're going to direct all of the resources that we have from public safety to our Neighbors Helping Neighbors program, our volunteer initiatives through Operation Spring Cleanup, to those high-density areas of crime and property maintenance code violations, and hopefully we'll start to see some strategic success when it comes to that.
I did want to ask you about that mapping system. What have you done in the past to try to track high-crime areas, or try to track trends, or try to track geographic areas within the city that were problem areas?
Sure. Well, it's never been done in the past that I know of by any previous administration. We've looked at data. We have the city broken up into four different quadrants, and we'll talk to our police chief. Area 1, which is the northwest side of our city, what kind of data are we seeing there on paper through numbers? But this is a very visual way, through a visual map, of actually pinning those issues so that we see that density visually and not just through numbers. And hopefully that will allow us strategically to benchmark where we are in our different neighborhoods and allow us to prioritize resources there to serve that area that much better.
On your plan as well, you were very plain about the fact the city has a theft problem it needs to address, and that would seem to go right to one of the things you could address with that pin mapping system. How are you going to address theft, and what are your particular concerns about that crime initially?
Sure. Well, you know, I think from this standpoint, we really rely on citizen voice. We had a great police community meeting in Circle Park, which is in the northwest side of our city, last week. You know, and we iterated the issue that, yes, public safety officials, that's their job to care about the city when it comes to public safety and crime and theft. But at the same time, we as citizens of our community need to take it incumbently upon ourselves to also have a hand in mitigating crime. So what we're asking citizens to do is there's no small reason to call the police department. Always call the police department. That's their job. That's what they're there for. And as we receive more citizen phone calls, even if it's a barking dog in the alley at night, that could be due to a reason that someone is coming in onto your premise that should not be there. The more people call in, the more it will allow us to update this pin mapping system and will allow us to strategically move forward. So citizen voice is going to be a huge part of this. We want to get people involved in relaying their concerns to the police department, no matter how big, no matter how small, so that we can direct our resources there.
I guess what I'm asking is, why did you identify theft as a specific crime that you want to target?
Sure. Well, theft, I believe, affects more people than anyone in this community. Obviously, with the drug issues that we're having across our state and nation right now, theft drives a lot of that. So this is something that people can stay alert to. We are seeing growing numbers in theft in our neighborhoods. So we wanted to let people know that we do see this as an emerging issue, and we wanted to let them know how they could help when it comes to this. And that's letting us know when they see something unusual or hear something unusual in their neighborhood.
You mentioned the idea of drug problems as well, and that's something else that comes up elsewhere in your plan. I want to know, what sorts of drugs are we talking about? Are we talking about, you know, on the more marijuana end of the spectrum or the more methamphetamine, heroin end of the spectrum?
Well, I can tell you, Stan, that prescription drugs kill more people than methamphetamine, cocaine, and heroin combined, not only here in the city but across our nation. We see that as a gateway drug, so we're really stepping up our efforts when it comes to drug enforcement, keeping in mind where we're at in the state of Indiana. We're on a pipeline, which is I-65, halfway in the middle of Chicago and Indianapolis, so we are in a prime location for drugs to filter in our community. We've stepped up our patrols when it comes to the interstate to keep that drug money and to keep those drugs out of the city before it even gets there. We're also putting into our budget for next year, and hopefully the council will approve of this, a canine program so that we can get a canine out on the street to allow us to detect those drugs that much easier.
Do city police have the manpower or the expertise necessary to be drug interdiction officers?
We do have officers that are trained in drug interdiction. We can never have enough police officers when it comes to this specific initiative. We have one drug detective in our detective department. Obviously, he is overworked and underpaid, which we're also working on. So we do need to step it up when it comes to manpower. We are taking the specific steps when it comes to more training so that our officers know what to recognize, even on a regular traffic pullover, when it comes to potentially detecting drugs. But I believe putting into the budget things like our canine program are increasing our efforts and will hopefully make us that much more efficient in the future. We'll never be able to stop drugs. I believe no official will ever be able to stop drugs, but we can certainly intervene and bust up that ring that's occurring and hopefully make a difference.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, we have run out of time, but thanks so much, and we look forward to talking to you again at this time next month.
Okay. Thank you, Stan. Hope you have a great day.
Thanks. Same to you. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. You can get to any of our mayors by emailing us at ask@wbaa.org. You can send questions via Twitter @WBAA News. And, of course, you can always call us. Join us next week for our conversation with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Until that time, I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Have a nice afternoon.